Amen. That's what I love about Cottonwood. We are always looking to make sure that we are running to God. Boy, we want our souls to be on fire. I want to invite you to reach and grab your copy of God's Word. Turn back with me, if you would, to a book that we've been studying over the last couple of weeks, the book of James. If you're new today to the series, James was written by James, the brother of Jesus. All of Jesus's life, pre-resurrection, James, his brother, was a doubter. He was an antagonist. He was a skeptic. He wasn't a believer. But it wasn't until James, the brother of Jesus, encountered not just a risen Messiah or a risen Savior, like you and I talk about, he encountered a risen brother. And that's when James finally figured out that Jesus was exactly who he said he was. And as a result, James became not a skeptic, not a doubter. He became a follower of Jesus Christ. Not only just a follower, but he also became a leader in the Jerusalem church. And if you're here when we started the series, I read a number of not just biblical sources, but non-biblical sources, non-Christian sources, where in those days they wrote about James, the brother of Jesus, that he was a godly man, he was a honorable man, he was a man of incredible integrity, great character, he was well-spoken, he was a good teacher. But all of those were accompanied with the fact that James became a follower of Christ. In the book of James, we come to a book that was written shortly before James was martyred for his faith. And it's really kind of a how-to manual on Christian living. Over the last couple of weeks, we've looked at a couple of things that James said. We've looked at James as he's told us to understand that every one of us will encounter trials, and we all know that. Then he talked to us and said every one of us encounter temptation. As long as there's red blood flowing through our veins, we encounter temptation that is common to all of us. Then he talked last week and we shared about that vital relationship, that vital core relationship between faith, genuine faith, and works. He says part of the way we demonstrate a genuine faith is by visible works, visibly doing things. And today we come to the issue of the tongue. Man, he talks about taming the tongue, and I want you to know when we read James here in a few seconds, it's going to remind us and hopefully cause us to reflect on the way we use our own tongue and the fact that, man, our tongues can be like flames of fire. This little 3-inch piece of my anatomy can praise and encourage, it can instruct and lead, or it can poison, burn, and destroy, all based on what comes out of here. And there will never come a time where we have totally and completely tamed the tongue. It's always available to be loosed for the wrong thing. Let's go to James chapter 3, verse 1, and I want to read it to you, and then I want to give you four key thoughts of what James, the brother of Jesus, says about our tongue. In James chapter 3, verse 1, he says, "Not many of you should become teachers, my fellow believers, because you know that we who teach will be judged more strictly." I would have loved to have forgotten about verse 1. He says, "We all stumble in many ways." He says, "Anyone who is never at fault in what they say is perfect." Then he goes on, says, "able to keep the whole body in check." He said, "When we put bits in mouths of horses to make them obey us, we can turn the whole animal to the left or the right," basically. Or take ships, for example. He says, "Although they are very large and are driven by strong winds, they are steered by a very small rudder, whichever or wherever the pilot wants it to go." Man, as we think about this, really, probably one of the truest marks of your Christian maturity, not what you state about your Christianity, not what it appears to be, perhaps the greatest mark of how mature you are in your faith is the way you and I, the way we use our tongues. That's why I titled this message that our tongue is the ultimate litmus test. It's the ultimate litmus test. I read a story this week as I was preparing for the message about a Jesuit community. You've heard of Jesuit priests. And there was a community where they all lived in kind of Jesuit housing. It wasn't beautiful housing. It was kind of like a camp environment. They had to interact with the same people and the same priest over and over again. And even in the company of the priests, there were people they liked and they didn't like. And so they really, in this Jesuit community, came up with three simple rules. Three simple rules on how they lived together and made it more harmonious. And this can apply to our church or your home or where you work. And here were the three simple rules. And every time a new priest would come in and live in the community as they were learning and obeying their gospel and learning about it, here were the three rules they would teach them. First thing they would remind the new person come in is this. Number one, you're not God. So don't look down on everybody else and don't think you're superior to everybody else. That's a pretty good rule, right? You ready for rule number two? Rule number two in the Jesuit community was this. This isn't heaven. Don't complain about it. How many of you know we don't live in heaven? We don't live in heaven. There will always be something to complain about. You ready for rule number three? Don't be a jerk while you're here. That doesn't sound that spiritual, but it's a lot more spiritual than they actually say it. Just so you'll know, I changed that word jerk. The real word they use is a Bible word. It's a synonym for donkey. Some of you that are really pure in heart and spirit going, what is that? You know, don't be one. Boy, three simple rules. This is in heaven. You're not God. Don't be a jerk. Man, how much better would our houses be and our homes be and our churches be and our life groups be and our relationships and neighborhoods if everybody just lived with those three rules? James unfolds for us the topic of the tongue and the nature of the tongue is being truly untamable. Number one, first thought from James chapter 3, verse 1 to 5 and following. First thought is this, our tongues are the ultimate litmus test as to truly how spiritually mature we are. Go back to James chapter 3, verse 1. Let me read it to you and show it to you. It says, let not many of you become teachers, my fellow believers, because you know you will receive a stricter judgment, not only here on this earth. We always talk about pastors and teachers and leaders living in glass houses where everybody just looks and love to find something wrong with the leader and the teacher so they can talk about it. But it says, listen, don't desire to be teachers. And that idea, teachers in the early church, everyone who was in the New Testament before they had, Paul had developed for us the organization of the church of teachers and elders and deacons and all of those things. Everybody was a teacher. So in other words, let not many of you decide to be a leader, an influencer in the church. Why? Because as an influencer in the church, we are held to a higher standard. We're held to a higher standard. There's a stricter judgment. And I want you to know, as your pastor for Mother's Day will be 21 years, that has always weighed on me. That I need to be careful what I say and be careful how I live. And let me tell you, sometimes I'm really, really good when it comes to my tongue and holding my tongue and not saying what I want to really say. There are other times I've not been so good at it. And boy, just a quick of a tongue, a crack of the whip, and boy, just, and you can't pull those words back. If you want to influence, if you want to be a leader, if you want to truly impact those around you with the gospel and your faith, it starts with the tongue. This is the ultimate litmus test. Then he goes on, notice what he says, because you know that we'll receive a stricter judgment. But he says, anyone who is never at fault in what they say is perfect and able to keep the whole body in check. Now that seems kind of odd. He says, so you mean if I just am constantly, I'm just constantly aware of what I say and I never make a mistake with my tongue, I'm perfect. Now, let me first of all open that word perfect up for you. Probably the best translation for what we understand today, the better translation is mature or complete. What he's basically saying is, if you ever get to a place where your tongue is not offensive, you've arrived. Then you'll know you're in heaven. Probably that means if you ever get to a place where your tongue is no longer offensive, it's no longer sinful, that probably means you've closed your eyes on this earth and you've opened them up in heaven. That's what he's saying. If you can ever get to a place where you are perfect in everything you say, and I want you to know, as I begin to examine my life this week, it didn't take me long to realize I wasn't perfect. I wasn't perfect. And the point is, none of us ever will be, so don't think we are. But our tongue is the ultimate litmus test. Remember what Jesus said in Matthew chapter 12? Let's go read it. And as we look at Matthew chapter 12, I can only believe that perhaps James, the brother of Jesus, was standing off to the side one time while Jesus was communicating to the Pharisees and the teachers of the law and those that were legalists. And they thought they were better than everybody. They thought they were God. They looked down on everybody. They didn't realize this wasn't heaven. They talked down to everybody. And notice what Jesus says. He says, make a good tree and its fruit will be good. Or make a bad tree and its fruit will be bad. For a tree is recognized by its fruit. You walk up, there's an apple tree, there's an orange tree, there's this. A tree is recognized by its fruit. Then notice what Jesus said. He said, you brood of vipers. Talking about the legalists, those that are always talking down at other people. He says, the Pharisees of the day, how can you who are evil, now hold on to that brood of vipers as it relates to what they say, because James, the brother of Jesus, picks it up here in a second that we're going to read. He says, you brood of vipers, how can you who are evil say anything good? He says, for the mouth speak what the heart is full of. A good man brings good things out of the good that is stored up in his heart, and an evil man brings evil things out of the evil that is stored up in him or in his heart. He says, but I tell you that everyone will have to give an account someday of the judgment for every empty word they have spoken. For by your words, you will be acquitted, and by your words, you will be condemned. Let me tell you what he was saying. He was saying that our words matter. Ultimately, what I say is the ultimate litmus test for how truly spiritually mature I am. Tomorrow represents the 142nd birthday of a man whose last name was Marconi. You ever heard of the Marconi Awards? That's the awards that they give to radio announcements. Marconi was a physicist, a scientist. He's the first one that invented or realized that you could electronically transmit radio waves from point A to point B to pick them up and reproduce them. In other words, he created the radio wave. He created the radio. He invented the radio. Now, later in his years, after creating the radio, he had a belief. As he got his systems better and he developed a better sending mechanisms and better receiving mechanisms, he believed that one day we would be so advanced that we could pick up with these sensitive listening devices the sound of every word and every noise that has ever been spoken. Marconi believed that. Now, science has since proven that that is false. That eventually all sound waves die out. So the good news for me is things I've said over the years will not be heard by someone, right? How many of you think that is some good news? I can just imagine someone listening in going, is that the pastor? How old was he? But here's the point. You ready? Although sound waves die, sound memories never do. I don't know about you, but I can still go back to elementary school. And I can remember to this day a couple of things that were very hurtful that were said to me. Anybody else? I can go back to middle school and I can remember some things that were said to me. I can go back, and I had a lot of great coaches over the years that did a lot of great and a lot of good things happened. And whether I was playing football or basketball or baseball or whatever it was, but there are two or three coaches that said some things to me that are just still swirling around, because sound waves die, but sound memories never do. And that's why that's why we got to be so careful with our words, because what we say, people will hear in their minds and their hearts and in their emotions over and over again, not just the next day or the next week or the next month or the next year, but perhaps the next decade or several decades. That's why it's so important that we be reminded that what we say, although the sound waves die, the sound memories never do. Here's a second thought that James tells us. You ready? He says, our tongues can be used for both good and bad. Our tongues can be used for good and bad. Man, as we look back to James chapter 3, James says, listen, when we put bits into the mouths of horses to make them obey us, we can turn the whole animal to the left or the right. Or take ships as an example. Although they are massive and large, they are driven by strong winds. They are steered by a very small rudder wherever the pilot wants them to go. Man, as I thought about that, I thought, golly, what a thought. First of all, starting with a bit and a rudder. Let's just put some images of a bit and a rudder up there on the sidewalk. Can we put those? And I don't know about you, but I've told you before, I'm scared of horses. Anybody else scared of horses? For some reason, I'm not scared of a lot. They just scare me. I look in their eyes. I have no idea what they're thinking. I think they're always thinking, I wish this guy would walk around behind me so I could kick him. That's what I think. And people tell me, people are real horse people. I'm not a horse people. I'm not a horse people. I'm not a horse person either. My tongue, it's a problem. People used to tell me, listen, you come ride my horse. As I was growing up or whatever, come ride, you'll love our horse. I grew up with a buddy that we'd go over every once in a while, and he had a Shetland pony that would be out there. And the only time that Shetland pony was ridden was when we would go over there Sunday after church. We would try to saddle that shit. Now everybody tells me, hey, that's not a real horse, right? They're mean. And I can remember that horse biting us and kicking us, and it would just sometimes decide it was going back to the house. We could either choose to go or fall off at any point. And so I developed a fear of horses, and everybody's a real horse person. Say, Pastor, they can sense that. Just walk up there with great confidence. I walk up to horse, and they just kind of go. And that's funny, because that's exactly the way I feel inside, just getting around them. But think about it. Compared to a massive horse, a small bit, a little tug here turns it this way, and a little tug there turns it that way. And our mouths are exactly the same. Man, our tongue, it can direct us right, or it can direct us wrong by whether we say good things or bad things. Let me tell you, it's not just a bit in your mouth. It's a bit in the mouth of everybody who listens to you. See, your tongue can drive you to the left or to the right, and it can do the same with those you speak with. Guys, if you want to turn your wife one way, you talk this way, or back the other way, you talk that way. Then he says, what about a rudder on a ship? Boy, in James's day, when he was writing, obviously they were all sailing vessels, but he understood that these massive sailing vessels were driven by strong winds. But all the pilot had to do was to sit up there and turn the rudder one way or the other way, and the whole massive ship would turn. So we need to understand what incredible power the tongue has to not only change my direction for the good or the bad, but change the direction, the attitude, and the mindset of everybody that we come into contact with. It can be used good or bad. Continuing with the thought of the bad, let me just give you this thought. Ready? Number three. James says that our tongues are incredibly destructive. Write that down. Our tongues are incredibly destructive. yeah, they're powerful for good, but they're probably more powerful for bad. Notice what James said. He says, likewise, the tongue is a small part of the body, a little 3-inch piece of anatomy. Blood circulates in there, it moves. Some days it moves better than other days. He says, it's a small part of the body, the anatomy, but it makes great boast. Consider what a great forest is set on fire by a small spark. The tongue also is a fire, a world of evil among the parts of the body. It corrupts the whole body and sets the whole course of one's life on fire. You ever see anyone that just seems like, man, all of their relationships are burning up and all their friendships are burning up? Why? It's because they're just constantly going around and their tongue is a fire and their tongue is a fire and a tongue is a fire and a tongue is a fire. When I pulled up this morning, got into church, pulled up the website, I think they're fighting another massive forest fire somewhere in Arizona, and you're just sitting there going, man, how do you put just a small spark? Either a campfire wasn't put out right, or someone threw a cigarette or a match out, or a lightning strike, just boom, and now all of a sudden thousands and thousands of acres being destroyed. James says that's exactly what our tongue can do. It corrupts the whole body and sets the whole course. That means the entirety of life can be set on fire just by what I say. Destroyed. I do everything I can to nurture my kids, and I fertilize my kids with good word and God's word and this, and they begin to grow and they begin to produce a little fruit, and then a spark here and a fire there, and I burn them down. We can do the same thing with our marriages. We can do the same thing with our relationship. The whole body sets on course. And he says, and itself is set on fire by hell. Let me tell you that word there by hell. If you go look at the word, it's the word Gehenna. Great word. Also, one of several words used in the New Testament for the word hell. Gehenna was an actual place. Let me tell you what the place is. It was just outside of Jerusalem. If you go into the Old Testament, go all the way back to 2 Kings, you had the Canaanites who worshipped pagan gods. And they would go to this place called the Valley of Hinnom, which is right outside of Jerusalem. They would go there and they had built altars to the pagan god Molech. And they would actually, when they needed to please the god, or they felt like the god would turn them, they would actually take their babies and their kids and their children out, lay them on the altar and burn them as sacrifices to the pagan god. In 2 Kings chapter 23, good Josiah came and became the king in Israel. And Judah, excuse me. And what he did is he went out to that place and he literally leveled it and destroyed it and told the children of God, don't ever go there again. He declared, and the priest at that time declared, that that place was defiled. In Jesus's time, in James's time, that place was still considered unclean. It was considered defiled because all of the things the Canaanites had done there to sacrifice to the false gods. So what was it used for during Jesus's day and during James's day? It was Jerusalem's trash heap. Jerusalem would take their common and everyday trash out there and they would just chunk it on that area because they were never going to be allowed to build on it. They would never worship on it. As a matter of fact, the only time they were to go there is when they had to dump something on it. Not only would they put their common everyday trash on it, they would also, if a dead animal was there, they would drag it out of the city or out of the place or out of the path. They would drag it and they would put it on that place. If a criminal was executed or a criminal died, they didn't want that body to remain in the city, so they would take it outside of the city and they would throw it on this trash heap. Now, when you have carcasses out there, it was not uncommon. They weren't burning these bodies to a pagan god named Molech. They were burning them to get rid of the remains and the stench. Anybody ever been up to the dump? Not that store. Talking about to the dump up in Melissa. How many of you, and used to be over here, how many of you ever gone there? I've been there on several occasions. If you've never been there, you need to go there. because every time I go there and I'll dump my truck or a trailer load of stuff, haven't been there in a while, it takes 3 days for you not to smell that. If you've been there, you know what I'm talking about. If you've been there, you know what I'm talking about. It's just the stench. It's in my truck, and I run with my, it doesn't matter if it's in January, I roll my windows down and I drive for 3 days because the stench. That's the word James uses. It says, your tongue, my tongue, our tongues are like oftentimes, too oftentimes, the burning stench of a trash heap and dead carcasses. That's pretty vivid. And not only that, it doesn't stop there. The whole course is set on by fire. He says, all kinds of animals and birds and reptiles and sea creatures are being tamed. You ever been to SeaWorld? Been to the zoo or something? He says, all kinds of them have been tamed by mankind, but no human can tame the tongue. It is a restless evil and full of deadly poison. We've got the rudder and the bit over here. I want to put a snake and a fire over here. Let's put them on the wall and let's talk about it. As we look at these two, James says, listen, your tongue can be used for good or bad. You get to choose. He says, but be careful. It's prone to bad. Remember, if you can keep it in check, you can be mature totally. He says it's filled with deadly poison. Did some research the last couple of weeks, and the most deadly snake I could come up with is the black mamba. Anybody have one? Just want to know who to steer clear of. The black mamba is so deadly, listen to this, that it only takes about 2 drops of its venom to kill a human being. 2 drops, not 2 gallons, not 2 ounces, not 2 bites. 2 drops. Before antivenoms were developed, black mamba bites were almost 100% fatal. 100% fatal. What makes this snake even more scary than any other snake is the black mamba can grow up to be 14 feet long. All right? It's the size of a pool cue. It's not like a big python or something like that. And it can travel at 12 miles an hour. The more I read about this thing, the more scared I got. In other words, that thing could run me down. You know, and then you go, well, all I have to do is outrun you, right? As I did some more research and I was doing, and I even found some of this on YouTube, the vast majority of people now who are bit by black mambas are those who are picking fruit. They're working out in the fields and they're picking fruit, whatever the fruit tree is or something like that. They're up there picking the fruit because the black mamba not only hunts on the ground, it hunts up in the tree. When it's hunting on the ground and it gets disturbed, the way it first desires, it's not looking to attack, the way it first desires to use its speed is to exit the premises. They just see movement going through the grass and it's gone. However, if one unsuspecting farmer or picker is just up there, usually in a ladder, picking the fruit out of the tree, and the mamba is in the tree, as soon as they cut the fruit off, they get bit in the face or neck or shoulder area, and it almost always kills them. And I thought, how many times were my kids or my wife, my neighbors or my friends or someone else coming up to me or us in need of some good fruit, just that quick, we unleashed deadly venom on them. Man, I thought, Lord, let that not be me. Well, how does it happen? Look at what the psalmist says. The psalmist put it this way. He says, God, set a guard over my mouth, Lord, and keep watch over the door of my lips. In other words, think before you talk. The psalmist says, God, I can't do it. if I'm going to overcome my tongue, you're going to have to send an angel. How many of you think, wouldn't that be awesome? If I just had an angel right there, and every time I go to open my mouth, no. Don't you dare utter that word. I mean, that's what the psalmist says. Psalmist says, I can't fix it, Lord. You know why we can't fix it? It proves we're not mature. Look at what James said earlier in James chapter 1, verse 26. He says, those who consider themselves religious and you yet do not keep a tight rein on their tongues deceive themselves. And their religion is worthless. And I thought, what might James mean about that? And I just begin to reflect as a pastor and over the years and encounters with people. And there are a lot of people who count themselves really, really religious, really, really spiritual. And you know what? When it comes to God's Word, they've got a lot of Bible knowledge. And man, when it comes to prayer, if you're in a group, you look to this man or you look to this woman and you say, you know, would you lead us in prayer? Because you just sense, man, their prayers are better. I can tell you, man, Dennis George, he's right over there. I want to tell you, he's a better prayer than I am. Man, when I go to the hospital, just like when I go, I want Dennis praying for me. But I've known people over the years, and you've probably known some, that when it comes to Bible knowledge and spiritual this and spiritual that, it's all great, but you give them about a nanosecond and they will tear someone down. By the way, Dennis isn't that way. And James is saying there are a lot of people who present themselves as very spiritual people. And they say some incredibly painful, poisonous, and burning things. And their religion is worthless. You know what James is saying? If you ever expect to have the opportunity for gospel witness or sharing your faith with somebody, if they're constantly hearing you badmouth somebody or tear someone down, my guess is you've had this experience. You ever had the experience of meeting someone for the first time? You shook their hand, and then as you kind of walk away, someone, perhaps your friend or someone that knows them, say, "Hey, man, you know they're kind of a jerk." And you don't know anything. You just seem nice, right? Immediately in your mind, what happens? The next time they walk up, you may not remember their name, but what do you remember? They're a jerk, right? How many of you know what I'm talking about? Have I lost you? And then all of a sudden you meet that person, you go, they're not that big of a jerk. I mean, they're a jerk. They're just not a real big one. No, you understand what I'm saying? And the point is, man, as God's children, if we want our religion to be meaningful, I can't sit there and spew someone else's sin or their past or this or that. I can't talk them down. I can't tear them down, because how am I going to deliver the gospel to someone I've talked down? Here's a fourth thought. James says, our tongues are confusing. Our tongues are confusing. Notice what James says. He says, with the tongue we praise our Lord and Father, and with it we curse human beings who have been made in God's likeness. He says, out of the same mouth, listen how confusing this is, come praise and curses. I just wish I had a little dial over here on the side of my cheek where I could just always turn it to praise. How many of you think that'd be cool? I mean, just turn curse all the way off. I'd want to turn it on every once in a while just because I need to get it out. He says, out of the same mouth come praise and cursing. My brothers and sisters, this should not be. He says, can both fresh water and salt water flow from the same spring? My brothers and sisters, can a fig tree bear olives, or can a grapevine bear figs? Neither can a salt spring produce fresh water. Man, what is in here will always come out right here. Look at what Paul said in Ephesians chapter 4. Look at it. He says, do not let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouths, but only what is helpful for the building up of others according to the needs, that it may benefit those who listen. That word unwholesome, It really is a word that was used in the Greek or the Roman marketplace of the time. It was when they would go into the marketplace and they would go up to the fruit stand and all the fruit would be rotted. That would be the unwholesome part. You ever done that? You go to the grocery store and you come home and say they didn't have good fruit. It's unwholesome. Or you look at the bananas. I don't know. When I eat a banana, I want it to be yellow. Am I the only person? But it seems like when I go to the store, I'm really hungry for a banana. They're all green. But if they let them last too long, they're all brown. I want the yellow ones. The brown is what he's talking about. That would be unwholesome. We'd say that's not good anymore. Throw it away. He says, man, don't let any unwholesome fruit come out of your mouth. Then it becomes a black mamba biting people, tearing people up. But what kind of talk should come out? He says, but only what is helpful for building others up according to whose needs? Theirs. Theirs. According to their needs, that it may benefit those who listen. In other words, what we should be thinking about is what can I say and how can I say something that will benefit someone else? Now, I want you to know I was stung so bad by this message that I came up with a Cottonwood Challenge. And I'm willing to lay myself on the line if you're willing to go take this challenge with us, all right? You ready? Let's go with the Cottonwood Challenge. Let's go ahead and put it up there. Here's the Cottonwood Challenge. If you're willing to join me, it's not long. I'm not asking you not to eat. I'm not asking you to run 10 miles a day, all right? It all has to do with your tongue. Five things that we are committing for 1 week to do. Now, by the time we read these, you're going to think, I'll do okay, but I'm guessing a C minus. That's the point. We're not talking about adultery. We're not talking about robbing banks. We're talking about using our tongue. Surely, if this sucker was tameable, we could commit for 1 week, right? The reason why I want you to make this commitment, because I want you to see how real this problem is. So here's the commitment. Ready? Commitment number one that I'm going to make, I invite you to join me. I will not use my tongue destructively to gossip, insult, lie, or please my own ego by tearing someone else down. Doesn't sound that hard. Number two, this week I will use my tongue positively to encourage, praise, tell the truth, even if it hurts me and I build up others. Okay. Number three, this week I will use my tongue to witness to someone else by sharing the gospel or inviting someone to church or offering to pray for someone else. How do you do this? You're getting ready to eat. Server comes up to you. We're about to pray. Anything I can pray for you about? Call the neighbor that you know that's been struggling for a while. Hey, can I pray with you? Call someone you know that's struggling with something. Hey, can I pray for you? Number four, this week, Before I say anything, I will ask myself, is what I'm about to say true? Is it necessary? Is it beneficial? Do I have permission to share it? Is my motive pure? Is my motive pure? Boy, if you ask yourself, a lot of conversation about other people would be eliminated right there in number four. Do I have permission to share it? I'm reminded of one gossiping lady who said, listen, I would never say anything about her unless it was good. And listen close, because this is really, really good. Isn't that the way so many people operate? Man, we never bring a person. Let me tell you what. If you never bring a person up unless you want to talk about their failures to tear them down, don't bother talking about them. Because it's not necessary and it won't build them up. Then here's my invitation. Next Sunday, come back. Come back next Sunday and let's see how we did. Keith, come on out and let's get ready to sing. Now, I know what you're saying. I wish I could have a clean slate. That's called grace. So I want to invite you, take that challenge seriously. Guy, I tell you what, ladies, let me ask you a question. Be honest, ladies. Ladies, how many of you would love your husband to score 100 on that test? Go ahead, you can raise your hand. How many of you would love for them to score 100? Some guys already confessed, I'm not making it. All right, guys, they just threw us under the bus. Men, how many of you men think it would be a great home if your wife scored 100 on the test? I see some of you weaklings out there. You're looking at your bride going, she looking? Yeah, she looking. Let's come back next week. I'm going to be honest with you. I'm going to come back and tell you I got about a B+, which in pastor speak is an A+. But we need grace. So that's why I asked Keith to lead us in grace, God's grace. So we're going to go out of here with clean slate. Everybody want a clean slate? That's what we're going to sing. Our altar team, you come on down. Let's stand. Altar team right here. If you need someone to pray with, you come. Let's sing grace, God's grace. Sing that. Grace.